There was at the time, not unknown to the present with its leftover vibrations of police state paranoia cultivated by narcotics bureaus, a very heavy implicit thought form or assumption that if you talked aloud about tea, much less junk, on the bus or subway, you might be arrested, even if you were only discussing a change in the law. It was just about illegal to talk about dope. A decade later, you still couldn't get away with national public TV discussion of the laws without the Narcotics Bureau and FCC intruding with canned film clips weeks later denouncing the debate. That's history. But the fear and terror that Solomon refers to was so real that it had been internalized in the schlup publishing industry, and so, before the book could be printed, all sorts of disclaimers had to be interleaved with the text, lest the publisher be implicated criminally with the author, lest the public be misled by arbitrary opinions of the author which were at variance with recognized medical authority, at the time a forcible captive of the Narcotics Bureau. 20,000 doctors arraigned for trying to treat junkies. Thousands fined and jailed 1935 to 1953 in what New York County Medical Association called a war on doctors. The simple and basic fact is that, in cahoots with organized crime, the Narcotics Bureau were involved in under-the-table peddling of dope, and so had built up myths reinforcing criminalization of addicts rather than medical treatment. The motive was pure and simple: greed for money, salaries, blackmail, and illegal profits at the expense of a class of citizens who were classified by press and police as fiends. The historic working relationship between police and syndicate bureaucracies had by early 1970s been documented by various official reports and books, notably New York's 1972 Knapp Commission report and The Politics of Opium in Indochina by Al McCoy. Because the subject, in medias res, was considered so outré, Burroughs was asked to contribute a preface explaining that he was from distinguished family background, anonymously William Lee, and giving some hint how some supposedly normal citizen could arrive at being a dope fiend, to soften the blow for readers, censors, reviewers, police, critical eyes in walls, and publishers' rows, God knows who. Carl wrote a worried introduction pretending to be the voice of sanity, introducing the book on the part of the publisher. Perhaps he was. A certain literary description of Texas Agricultural Society was excised as not being germane to the funky, harsh, non-literary subject matter. And, I repeat, crucial medico-political statements of fact or opinion by William Lee were on the spot, in parentheses, disclaimed by editor. As agent, I negotiated a contract approving all these obscurations and delivering Burroughs an advance of $800 on an edition of 100,000 copies printed back-to-back, 69'd, so to speak, with another book on drugs by an ex-narcotics agent. Certainly a shabby package. On the other hand, given our naivete, a kind of brave miracle that the text actually was printed and read over the next decade by a million cognoscenti who did appreciate the intelligent fact, the clear perception, precise, bare language, direct syntax and mind pictures, as well as the enormous sociologic grasp, culture revolutionary attitude toward bureaucracy and law, and the stoic, cold-humored eye on crime. Allen Ginsberg, September 19, 1976, New York City.
This ends Appendix 7, the introduction to the 1977 edition of Junkie by Allen Ginsberg, narrated by Mark Nelson.